Today, the so-called building reforms. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today I'm joined by property insider Edwin Almeida. Hi, Edwin.
Hold my tequila, Batman. It's Martin North. How are you going?
Very good. Yeah. Now, last week there were a few developments around the building industry which superficially may look quite interesting, but I'm quite concerned about how much this is really going to change the very dire situation that we're in.
Well, I don't think it's going to have a lot of a big impact, given the fact that it's going to take them at least 12 to 18 months to pull the finger out and do anything, or if anything, about it. The other thing that needs to be considered is the simple fact that we've got thousands, tens of thousands of buildings that have been built from medium density to very high density and high-rise construction in the last 15 years. And quite frankly, since 1988-89, the governments at all levels, local, state and federal government, have dropped the ball. So it's funny, Martin, how they're all coming about and putting together these boards and formulating and telling the general public, hey, look, it's okay, it's under control, we've got it all covered here, because we've now come up with a brand new plan to fix the problem. The only way that you're going to fix the current problem is to demolish a lot of these buildings that have been built, and I've been saying this for a while now, that they've been badly built, badly regulated. We don't know the extent of it. We've only just scratching the surface.
Yeah, so let's just go through it step by step. So firstly, the first thing that happened last week, there was another building development that actually hasn't even been occupied yet. So the Sugar Cube development, right? And that was because it was built on land that is effectively suspect. So people have never actually even moved into those properties, right? But we also had, of course, the Victorian government basically say, well, we've started the audit. We've looked at around 1,200 residential high-rise so far, and around 400 of them need remediation. This is to do with the flammable cladding, right? So they announced a bit of a plan to help finance some of those remediation steps. And then we had the announcement from the joint conversation between federal and state about the building regulations, and basically saying, well, we'll take the sugar, we're recommendations, and we'll do some stuff around building regulations. Now, I had a feeling, I thought we had national building regulations already, didn't we? Or am I missing something?
Yeah. Well, they seem to forget that in 1980 we had the Australian building regulations. Then that morphed into the Building Code of Australia by 1988, and then we got the whole this deregulation of 1998. And as a matter of fact, Martin, we've also got. We've also got the Australian Building Codes Board. That's the ABCB operates under an internal governmental agreement between the nine governments, and is updated from time to time. This is a board that's meant to update the whole industry as to what's happening, what's and what's going on. So all of a sudden they've got this flamboyant idea that they're going to put together this new panel. So what the hell was the last panel doing? What the hell was the last initiative doing? An initiative that's been in place since 1988, but that's when it all went pretty much pear-shaped.
Right. So my question is, so we've got building standards already, right? So in your opinion, is the fundamental issue the building standards themselves, or is it actually the policing and compliance against the building standards, which is the real issue?
And this is what I've been saying, Martin. The standards, our standards are very high. Relatively, in, you know, figuratively speaking, our standards are very high. As a matter of fact, there's more red tape to our building standards than a lot of standards around the world. And we should be building something fundamentally, something that's going to last, you know, more than 60, 100 years. At the moment, we're only building stuff that's going to last anywhere between 6 and 10 years, you know, which is ridiculous. So our standards, our buildings, and it's the foundational principle of the regulatory bodies or the mandate over regulation of these standards on site regulation that the governments at all levels have dropped the ball. Have they dropped the ball, or have they been complicit in acting alongside builders and developers that have infiltrated state government panels, that have infiltrated local government panel, council governments and local government panels, and that have infiltrated all levels of government that have pushed for, you know, she'll be right, mate. Here's a brown paper bag. You know, don't worry about that. Hey, nothing to see on this side. Don't worry about that. You know, we'll look after you. You know, the election's coming up. I mean, it's a mess. And it all comes back to that, what I've been saying, and for many years, we've got to really drill down into why certain commercial industrial zones were rezoned for high-rise development without proper remediation of the land. And this is where, and also we've got the Mascot fiasco, we've got the Parramatta fiasco that are going to rise. We've got all these construction areas that are built, or zones that are built, high-rise construction zones that are built on water tables that are going to have a huge effect on the environment, on the state of living standards. There are issues with a current building in Parramatta that I've got word on. I've been doing a little bit of research on where the geotech report, when they submitted the DA, the drilling only went down to 18 metres, which effectively it's about three basements. But lo and behold, five basements of car parking appears, and now they can't properly ventilate the basement car parking, and this building's full of aluminium combustible cladding as well. So but why is this done? Why does this happen? Because the controls are not there. The policing has not been there since 1988, 89, when governments at all levels dropped the ball because they were more focused on political donations, on being propped up for the next elections, and now they're telling the general public, it's okay, we're going to put together another national board to solve all these issues. What you're going to need is put together a national workforce that's going to pull a lot of these buildings down and rebuild them.
Right. So let's just be clear, right? We have a historical issue, which means over the last 15, 20 years, we've had a very low quality of construction in places, right? Nobody knows how widespread the defects are, but every time you turn over a stone, you find more defects, right? And those defects relate to things like inadequate foundations, as we saw at the Opal Tower, or indeed poor land reclamation, like we saw at the Sugar Cube, or even things like flammable cladding. And, you know, a lot of buildings have been retrofitted with flammable cladding as well. So not only have you got new buildings, but you've got old buildings that have actually been repurposed and redeveloped as well. So even, you know, if a building was built 20, 30 years ago, if the cladding is more recent, it could actually still be a risk, right? So that's where we are, right? And the point is that nobody is coming clean on the size and quantum of the total issues that we face as a country.
And that's what's being reported at the moment, Martin.
Yeah.
Let me just stop you there for a second before you continue. What about the fact that from early 2000s, 2007 onwards, we started getting a lot of Chinese products being brought into the country, and all of a sudden we also started getting an Asian workforce that set up companies to take care of gyprocking and to take care of electrical works and supplying electrical and plumbing equipment or plumbing services to the industry. Now, there are reports going back as far as 2013, 2012, where the gyprock that was being imported contains up to about 10% asbestos in the sheeting. And a lot of people don't know this, Martin. A lot of people haven't been made aware of the issues. It's not just what we see. It's the stuff that we're not aware of and we're not seeing. Moving along on that vein of thought, we also have very low quality electrical products that were bought into the country. So we've lost control because we're not using, and we've stopped using, and we're not manufacturing local products. We send it all overseas. There's very little control or lax controls over there. We once again have to rely on, yes, it's okay. Let's tick that box. Yes, it's okay. So we're relying on people's on honesty. Is that what we're relying on? We're relying on people ticking the right boxes and saying, yeah, it's okay. So therefore it must be okay because this box was ticked.
Okay, so let's just be clear. A lot of our materials are imported, right? And a lot of them are coming from various sources, including China. There is no standard process to evaluate the delivery of each of those materials as they come in, right? There are some sort of high-level standards that are out there. And as you say, the standards are actually reasonably good.
But yeah, the standards there, the stand for gyprock, for example, Martin, the standards in China for gyprock are that if there's 10% asbestos in the gyprock, it's high quality.
Right.
But that's not our standards.
No, no.
Our standard is that, zero tolerance.
Yeah, okay, right. So the Australian standard would say zero asbestos in gyprock, right? But the standards overseas are different. And so what's the process? I mean, I'm trying to get my head around this. So when somebody imports materials for construction in Australia, who checks whether they comply with Australian standards or not?
It's a good question.
I see. Okay. So basically, it sounds to me as though there is no formal standard approach to ensuring that the materials that are being imported at the moment into Australia for the construction sector comply with local standards.
Look, there are formalities in place, but once again, how are they being controlled?
Yep.
How can you look? And we know for a fact there's thousands of containers coming in on a daily, weekly basis. Mm. So. Are they checking one in every 100? Are they checking one in every 1,000? Are they checking one in every 500? I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah,
is the depletion of the workforce, which would otherwise control what's coming in, control how things are being delivered. In this case, in the construction sector, but yet the workforce that has been depleted is the workforce that would otherwise control the delivery of products and the level of construction. The inspectors do all the to make sure that everything's right, but yet the political parties have an influx of workers. Oh, I need somebody to hold my pen. I need somebody to drive my car. I need another person to polish my shoes. I need somebody to iron my shirt. So the political profile, or the political industry, as I call it, all of a sudden has doubled, if not tripled, in size. And that's where all our taxpayers' dollars have gone to, and where it's really required in terms of providing adequate inspectors and inspections and supervision to monitor what's going on. Hey, forget about that. That's just the end product's just for the plebs.
Okay, so when you then when you think about a construction project, right, you'll have people there who are responsible for certifying the particular progress of that property as it's being built complies with the building standards. But they wouldn't be testing individual materials, would they?
Of course not. All they're
Right.
relying on is they're relying on again on yes, this ticks. Yes, look, see this? It says it's compliant. So therefore it must be.
Okay, right. I mean, there are holes everywhere. I mean, because everywhere you look, so you don't know whether the quality of the materials are actually compliant. You don't know whether they've been used in the right way, and there is no independent objective view as to whether that building at the end of the day complies with the building standards.
Unless you start testing every single panel. I mean, we know many of our followers, Martin, have been telling us people that are actively working in the industry. There's a lot of stuff that I have seen myself, and there are a lot of questions that I've raised over the years from what I've seen in the different in the various sites, watching this the construction, how quickly it's gone up. Some of our engineers, architects, and the fellow you, Martin, have noted various things, like watching one of the things that I've spoken a lot about with friends and relatives and anybody that's willing to listen, and that is that how quickly the buildings erect go build slab after slab after slab, without allowing the slabs to cure properly, without allowing the slab to what would let's say dry properly in order to be able to hold the next load. But yet we're once upon a time in certain cases, and particularly one of the ones that one of your viewers followers sent in. Yeah, he's flabbergasted that within 2 weeks the next slab is poured when. I just recalling trying to recall his email that he shared with me, and he's saying that theoretically you would be waiting up to 6 weeks for that slab to cure to dry before the next one goes on. And this is and keep in mind, Martin, that these are before we, as I said, we went from three level walk-ups, 14, 15, 17, 21 units in a complex to 5, 6, 7 levels, where then we're accommodating 40, 50 apartments in a complex, but over a bigger footprint of a bigger footprint of land. And now the land envelope has gone from 2,000 square meters to 1,000 square meters, and now we're putting 110 units on top of that. I mean, it's insane stuff, and building, digging basements where we shouldn't be going anywhere, anything lower than 7 meters, but yet we're going. Some of the construction's being allowed to go in 30, 40 meters deep into the ground. So where are the controls? It's a good question. The controls have always been there. There's volumes and volumes and volumes of controls, but nobody's doing the controlling.
But so basically the rules are there, but nobody's checking to see whether the rules are actually being complied with. All the reports that I've seen suggest that basically things have been nodded through. There's a conflict of interest with regard to building quick and getting it signed off quick so that effectively the developers can just move on. And what that means is that then people who then subsequently buy and move in end up with a property that is actually substandard and not fit for purpose. So my question then is, do they have any comeback?
Look, I've been trying to get the mainstream media of late to really look at all these people that have been disenfranchised by and predominantly tenants. I mean, tenants are just let's forget about tenants. I mean, that's a whole attitude. I've been very vocal for many years. I've been property manager, running property management teams myself. Being trained in property management arena, I have a great compassion for tenants, being doing the right thing by for both parties, being the proper conduit between the owner of the property and the person that pays the rent, pays, you know, the tenant. So the tenants have been really just pushed to the side altogether. They do have a very strong comeback on the agent that put them there in the first place, particularly if the agent did not disclose or the property manager did not disclose any material fact. And that's anything that's hazardous to their health, anything that is detrimental to the lifestyle that would incur one form or another of, you know, or that would be endangered to health and person. And the property is not fit to live in, quite frankly. A lot of these aren't, especially with a lot of the mold that's appearing now in these, in a lot of these apartments as well.
Mm.
So they've got to come back to the property management teams, and they should be really approaching that, and they should be really following up on that, because it is set in stone. Likewise, if people have bought from these Spruikers predominantly, they're the marketing companies that evolved over the years as well, as opposed to your local traditional real estate agency, where there was a bit more respect for the local agent. There was a little bit more of trust in the local agent, as opposed to these spruiking companies that just, you know, push sales and sell anything that looks like a dwelling. It's got four walls and a roof. Yeah, let's sell it to predominantly overseas investors anyway. But if they didn't disclose any material fact, if they didn't disclose any of this, to the purchaser, well, they potentially are in a lot of strife as well. And ignorance is no excuse, Martin. Ignorance is no excuse. And a lot of the purchasers that have bought things by way of off the plan, and where agents have not disclosed quite a number of things. For example, if they didn't disclose that they were aware of the fact that across the road there was another building going to be built and it was going to block the views, well, there's a comeback for that as well. And all these things had been tested in previous years. So the agents can't, the selling agents or marketing agents can't say, oh, we didn't know, we don't know. Well, it's that is why you get paid, you know, the amounts of commissions that we earn in order to get informed. And that's why I say the purchasers have got a very strong comeback. The owners' corporations should be looking very carefully at the background and the relationship between the strata managers and that they've appointed to manage the entire building, and the relationship between the strata managers and the builders. But in most cases, you will find, Martin, that the strata managers have a very close, and what I refer to, dangerous liaison relationship with the builder developer, because management of an entire building is worth a lot of money ongoing, not only at the beginning, but perpetually. And then because there's all sorts of fees that not only do they get fees for managing, as in terms of, you know, the strata fees or that people pay, but also they get not only management fees, but they also get kickbacks from insurance companies. They also get kickbacks from tradespeople working in the building. So it's a little goldmine. Every building is a little goldmine for a management company. So once again, we find that, and from the Mascot Towers, that as the stories evolved and I was saying, look back into the relationship between the strata manager, and then certain reporters caught on to that and they started digging a little bit deeper, and then you sort of see that there are very strong and shaky relationships between the management companies and the builder developer. So, yeah, they do have there is a lot of ground for comeback. Let's face it, at the end of the day, how far are you going to get chasing the government? How far are you going to get chasing the local government, for that matter, the state government and the federal government? quite frankly, the state and the federal government have got no money anyway, and they're just going to get hit with another nuclear bomb. And that is the fact that a lot of the apartments that won't settle, that are not settling, that have got bought off the plane, there's a stamp duty that was paid into the state government coffers of 5% on or before 3 months of exchange of contracts. And now that those properties aren't going to settle, a lot of buyers, and I've spoken to a number of law firms, and their clients are starting to chase back the stamp duty that was paid in advance. And the state government are in a world of caca.
Right. Yeah, well, we've certainly seen stamp duty incomes fall considerably. And as you say, if there are going to be refund claims, then that's going to hit them even worse. I guess one other question is, if all of this stuff is now coming up to the surface, one of the things that seems to be happening is that insurance companies are getting more twitchy about providing indemnity cover for those people who are in the building sector or in the certification sector or in the surveying sector. So in some cases, premiums have gone up significantly, you know, several hundred percent from where they were previously. Or in others, insurers have actually started to leave the sector. So what do you think the implications of that are?
Huge. We've seen the reports of the Apple Tower. The insurance policy from $100,000 has gone right up to $2 million, and that's got to be paid by, I believe, by the middle or the end of August this year. Otherwise, that building's not going to be covered. The question is, why do you even want to take up a policy in a building that's going to be, once they remove those props, that thing's just going to continue to sink. Not given the fact that it's been built on toxic waste dump. But all that aside, we've also got reports where private certifiers, their insurance, the professional indemnity insurances, in some cases the legitimate ones, have gone from $18,000 to $200,000. So they just can't survive, and we're going to see insurance policies just climb, and even from my industry, the insurance won't cover a lot of agents now. There are a lot of insurance policies. I think we're down to a couple of insurance companies that will cover real estate, and it's getting worse because of what I've been talking about, because they're under our statutes, under our legislation, tenants, purchasers, the general public have got a very strong case if we have not disclosed material fact, or if we have hidden anything, or if we've knowingly omitted to disclose anything. So obviously that's got to be proven, but I can tell you the NCAT, the tribunal, and the high courts, who goes that far, they're already of the opinion that my industry, unfortunately, it's not a very honest industry. Right. So
Edwin, if you stand back then and think about, let's just think about the high-rise apartment sector at the moment. With all of these issues, so we've got poor quality construction, we've got the flammable cladding, and we've got a supply of property still being built, but perhaps less appetite. So what's happening to unit and apartment prices? Because of course everyone's been claiming recently that suddenly the market's turned and everything's now looking rosy and prices are going to grow, but I'm not sure that's the true story, is it?
Well, you only have to look at the as I say the granularized data side of what's been reported by the mainstream. The growth that we saw of the point 0.4% last month was predominantly in the apartment sector, but that was because a lot of these apartments that settled in that particular month were settlements that from off the plan purchases that actually one reason or another they proceeded to settlement and they settled. These were apartments that were bought in 2015, 2016, at at the height of the market. And so, and if they call that a turnaround, well, it's a really long shot in terms of where it's going to go. We're going to see, I think, the construction industry overall, what I've noted on the ground and from my colleagues is that, construction overall, particularly the project home builders, they haven't, as I said before in previous discussions, you've got some of the major project home builders that were building it upwards of 650, 700 homes a year in 2018. Most of them barely got to 250. And now in some cases with some of these project home builders, they haven't even signed up 30 contracts. Now, there are a lot more people involved in the building industry in the project home side of things than there is in the high-rise, because a high-rise is just sort of, Lego-style construction where it's minimum labor, minimum supervision, whereas when you build a home, you could have upwards of 50, 60 people going through the home that have got something to do with the construction of one single home. So there's a lot of there are a lot of things at play, Martin. Apartment prices going down, people not buying anything new and off the plan. They're starting to do a lot more research, as I said, on before they sign a contract. Look at the not only the new shiny apartments that are being built, but look at the historically, what has that builder built in the past? Go and have a look at what they built 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, to see how that's withstanding the test of time. Talk to residents and the owners in those blocks before you commit to buying something that they're building now in order to be more equipped to make a better decision. I've said that for many years, that's what you've got to do. Look at what was on that land prior to being converted into residential development and high-rise, particularly high-rise. What sort of industry? Because most of these areas where they've been rezoned for high-rise, not only have they been rezoned on floodplains and on water tables, but also on commercial industrial land that were, as I said, in Homebush area, they were manufacturing napalm in that area, and they didn't take out the waste, they buried it. That's why you get all sorts of weird and wonderful fish coming out of Parramatta River. And that's if there is anything left there. But so you've got all these historical checks that one must do. So you've got the landscape is telling us construction is on the way down. It's affecting the building industry because of there's no jobs. We've got people that are turning up to the office that are builders that would take on handyman work. And that tells you where things are going. I've had, with a particular client, I've had five builders bid to build a project home for one of my clients where they would have normally charged $330,000 for the type of home that you wanted built. We got them down to $255,000, and with an extra $10,000, we got the equivalent of a house that would otherwise cost $350,000 because they are hungry. They are hungry for work. That's what's happening out there. So unemployment, I think, is going to go through the roof. We're going to see more and more the effects of what's happened in the last 6 months come to bear right in the next 6 months. There's no movement, and then there's my industry that's also affected in all this, Martin. I'm talking to agencies and agents that that are just, they've got no listings. they've got no, and at the end of the day, that's how you survive. If you're predominantly focused on sales, well, that's it. That is your bread and butter. If you've got no listings, if you've got no sales, well, tell me what else are you doing in order to justify your existence. So you've got a huge impact on my industry, where in a lot of offices, the sales teams have been told, well, you either work on full commission only, or we can't support you anymore. So that's a huge. Now then, there's also the car industry, which you and I have discussed about before, because it's all hand in hand. It all comes, it all plays out. So these industries that predominantly have a lot of salespeople. The sales force is a huge sales force. Well, that sales force is shrinking, and is shrinking rapidly, which is putting a lot of people out of a job, or they're going from a full-time job into a part-time job. So it's unsustainable. So it's a mixed bag. I think we might have had a bit of a dead cat bounce. We might have had a bit of a what would you call it? A bit of positiveness out there, a bit of confidence being pushed out there by the in the political arena, by the fact that the Liberal Party continued on power. There's all these illusions of we're going to give you these extra grants, we're going to make it easier for you to buy property in the future. All these things that they haven't yet worked out how it's going to be done. Is it going to be a lottery? Are the banks going to even accept these loans, knowing the fact that the people are only coming in with a 5% deposit? That's yet to be determined. And who gets it? Do they all put their name in a hat, and then the MP Suka, is he going to draw the names out and say, yes, you get it, you don't, yes, you do, you don't, yes, you do? I mean, how is it all going to play out? I think it's going to continue to be a bit of a mess, personally.
All right, so you're still thinking that ahead home prices are not going to recover. I mean, Oxford Economics last week said 20% over 3 years in Brisbane, 6% up over 3 years in Sydney, and similar in Melbourne. What are you thinking?
I'm still thinking, look, I was very bearish on the fact that I was seeing very high drops in prices by the middle of the year. But hey, it's still July. You're not going. The viewers aren't going to stone me if I'm a few months short of my prediction. I think there's a lot of things that have played out that has given the market a little bit a boost of steroids I don't think that would have been there if the Labor Party got into power. So I think it's just, and also the fact that the banks are very cautious as to how they approach people that are in mortgage stress, because those indicators are still there, Martin. And if anything, from your analysis and your surveys, mortgage stress is climbing. It's only this last week that we started to see the unemployment numbers, full-time unemployment numbers increase, and have a or there's very little impact in full-time employment figures, and I think that change is starting to happen. But I think it's going to pick up. I believe it's going to pick up momentum. The only reason why we are seeing numbers, this confidence, is because let's not forget that we had a large amount of properties that were on the market for a very long time with vendors that were sticking to high prices, but they some properties were on market 90 days, 120 days, 150 days. So it's best to take it off the market. Now that all these the steroids had been pumped into the property arena of late, we've got that, you know, a bit of a bounce, or the mainstream media called it a bit of a bounce. But I want to think that, and I but I believe, and I'm so confident about this, that I really strongly believe that people are waiting for that the seasonal change where all the magic happens, and that is spring, and they're waiting for spring to put a lot of properties back on the market. Now, I don't just say that lightly, Martin, because as you know, I talk to a lot of people in the industry, and I get a lot of reports from people in the industry, and a lot of my colleagues that I've been talking to in the last 2-3 weeks, they've all been saying, I've got X amount of vendors that won't go on the market now. They're going to wait till spring. It's spring. Now, I know there are some mainstream media reports out there saying that some agents are saying that that's an illusion, that that's not going to happen, that there's going to, the people aren't going to come. But I think I'll be on the money with that. But hey, that's just me. That's just me. And like I say, I'm just saying.
Okay, and Edwin, before we finish, we should just give a plug to your new YouTube channel.
Yeah, well, I hope you like the format there, Martin. I've been doing YouTube videos for quite a number of years, 8-9 years or so, and trying to get things going. So I finally got a new format. So I hope you enjoy it. I'll try and include a bit more humour and make the gloominess of my industry a little bit more humorous. Definitely, pick on Uppercut and the gangster from Victoria from time to time. But it's all in fun. But at the same time, trying to inform the general public of what's happening out there and the rights that they have, and not to feel alone. To know that there are people like yourself, like Uppercut Adams, the gangster, and all our supporters out there that are willing to lend a hand and get things done right.
Well, we'll put a link to your channel there, Edwin, and
much appreciated.
Perhaps people who are following DFA will also go across and follow Edwin directly, because my perspective, Edwin, you have a very important and unique perspective on what's going on, and I think you've got your finger on the pulse. So I really appreciate your time today, and I think, you know, just to summarize, what we're saying is that the announcements from last week will make very little difference. We have material and structural issues in many properties across Australia, and this is going to cost big, and it's going to take a long time to play out. And anybody thinking of buying into the high-rise market at the moment should do their homework and make quite sure that they don't get caught down the track.
Very much so. It's something that, as we said before, Martin, research, and when you think you've done all the research, go back and do it again.
Good advice, Edwin. Thanks for your time today. Cheers.
All the best. Thanks, Martin.
Thanks.